It's Nicole Sandler on RadioWeRNot.com. Questioning authority daily. The Nicole Sandler Show. To get in touch with Nicole, dial 800-795-1159. That's 800-795-1159. And now, here's Nicole.
Hello.
All right. Hey, hey, Nicole. Hold on. We got, it's Nicole Sandler here. We got a brand new intro to our segment, thanks to the good folks over at SoFloRadio.com.
It's time once again for Fools on the Hill with Nicole Bell on the Nicole Sandler Show.
Of course, I mistakenly hung up on Nicole Bell.
Hello.
Sorry about that. I hung up on you by mistake.
Okay.
Did you hear the intro?
I missed it.
I'm going to have to replay it just because it's that good. Here we go. Well, take two. Ready?
It's time once again for Fools on the Hill with Nicole Bell on the Nicole Sandler Show.
All right. Here we are. RadioOrNot.com and SoFloRadio.com. Finally, I got the open that I wanted. Nicole Bell from Crooks and Liars is with us every Monday morning now, very early where you are, to sort of dissect the Sunday talk shows, a segment we call Fools on the Hill. So how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. It's a little early, so I'm going to keep sipping on my coffee while
okay.
I do this.
But, all right.
No, I'm doing well. How are you doing?
Real good. And I really appreciate you getting up early for us to keep the segment going, because I love it.
Oh, good. Well, thank you. I have fun doing this, too.
Terrific. Well, of course, Saturday, let's start right off. Saturday was the 9th anniversary of 9/11, the attack on the World Trade Center, and that dominated the talk shows this weekend, right?
Right, and understandably, I think, you know, that is really a defining tragedy for the country, and how we've reacted to it has really kind of determined the direction of the country for the last 9 years. You know, and speaking as someone who has Muslims in her family, I hate to say this, but I think we're sort of going backwards of late.
Oh, I think you're absolutely right, completely right. And I wish I could remember who it was who said it. But now, you know, a lot of people, and it was someone on one of the shows yesterday, but somebody very rightly said that we've overreacted to 9/11. I mean, we've overreacted.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't think we did initially, but that's not true. I mean, anytime you start factoring in invading Iraq and Afghanistan, I think that was an overreaction, and that was sort of a country at loss in terms of how you respond to something like this and not really understanding what's going on in that part of the world that we would allow them, we would allow our government to go ahead and invade Iraq.
Yeah. Well, let's get to some of the sound. The imam of the proposed Islamic Cultural Center in Lower Manhattan, also known as the Ground Zero Mosque, was on ABC's this week with Christiane Amanpour. Ah, it would help if I turn up the sound.
Are the sensitivities of the people who've raised the objections to the center being so close to Ground Zero?
I'm extremely concerned. I'm very, very concerned about their sensitivities, and this is why we have reached out to them, and we will continue to reach out to them.
Do you think you, in retrospect, should have done something different from the beginning? Did you do enough politicking, if you like, at a grassroots, local level to involve everybody in the community, including the 9/11 families?
Well, we certainly had reached out, and this project was front page news in the New York Times last December. No one objected. What has happened is that since May, 5-6 months later, for political reasons, certain politicians decided that this project would be very useful for their political ambitions.
Sarah Palin made a famous tweet saying, "Please reconsider, the feelings are too raw." What did you think about that?
I think it's disingenuous to a certain extent. The fact of the matter is, A, this has been used for political purposes, and there's growing Islamophobia in this country. How else will you describe the fact that mosques around the country are now being attacked? We are Americans too. We are treated and talked about today as if Muslims are not Americans. We are Americans. We are doctors, we are investment bankers, we are taxi drivers, we are storekeepers, we are lawyers. We are part of the fabric of America. And the way that America today treats its Muslims is being watched by over a billion Muslims worldwide. And the battleground today, Christiane, is not between Islam and the West. The battleground has been moderates of all faith traditions in all the countries of the world against the radicals of all faith traditions in all parts of the world.
Imam Rauf is pretty reasonable, isn't he?
He really is, and it makes all the fear-mongering just that much more ridiculous and frighten little bunnies. Because listen to this man. This is someone we need to fear. This is someone who's a radical, you know, that hates the country. It's absurd. He makes a great point. This Park 51 site has been under plans for a year. And yep. Nobody said boo about it.
Nothing.
Until just a few months ago, because they realized that there was political gain to be made. And, you know, I love the fact that he calls out Sarah Palin specifically, because, again, what's her agenda for doing this? Nothing but partisan gain.
Exactly. And the whole, you know, and then to take this, the wacko in Gainesville, Florida, who thankfully did not burn Qurans on Saturday, and plant the seed in him, to equate his Quran burning with the so-called 9/11 mosque or the Ground Zero mosque was absurd. He never made that association until Sarah Palin got into the act.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you know, shame on the media again for giving Sarah Palin that much credibility.
Yep.
You know, to give her that much legitimacy into the national dialogue just shows you how bereft they are of, you know, honesty. I mean, you talk about Sarah Palin being disingenuous, the media is being disingenuous too, because, you know, when Christiane Amanpour asks him specifically, politicians, she doesn't go with John Boehner, she doesn't go with Mitch McConnell or any actual elected official. She goes with Sarah Palin, who couldn't even hack her own single term as governor. So, yep. You know, shame on the media as well for being disingenuous about this argument and not ever correcting all of the lies surrounding it.
No, you're right. Well, you know, it's sensationalism, and that's what the media likes to cover because it's good for ratings. And for some reason, whether it's, you know, the train wreck that you can't look away from or people for some reason actually like the woman, she gets eyeballs. And so whenever, you know, as someone just said in the chat room, Sarah Palin tweets are now officially news.
And well, they're apparently officially GOP policy papers, and that's kind of pathetic on the part of the GOP.
Yes, it is. Now, Riza Aslan, who is a professor, right? He's a professor and a I think an Iranian American.
Correct.
He was on Meet the Press and also talked about, as you put it, what many of us who are trying to make a distinction, you know, he talked about what goes on, what's happening with this debate that shouldn't even be a debate. Here's part of it.
Mainstream it's becoming with politicians on both sides, and I would have to include the former mayor in this category, openly and explicitly associating American Muslims with Al-Qaeda. I mean, what I'd like to know from not just the former mayor, but from, you know, the people who keep talking about this Islamic Community Center, is that what is it that this multi-faith, multi-story community center being led by an American imam that two presidents, Republican and Democrat, have used as an ambassador to the Muslim world, a cultural ambassador to the Muslim world. What does that have to do with Al-Qaeda? Mm-hmm. The answer is kind of simple, actually. Islam. But let's call a spade for a moment. If you are painting 1.5 billion people with the same brush of violence and extremism, you're a bigot. Mm-hmm. And I think what's disturbing is the way that that's become part of the natural discourse.
Well, and it's become, Ron, it's become politicized.
You know, he made a great point there.
He did. And there's no other way to get around it. And, you know, nobody wants to say yes, I'm a bigot. Nobody wants to fully admit that. But the reality is, if you are conflating in a vast group of people who have all different, you know, lives, are fundamentally peaceful, with a small fringe element of people, if you do that, you are a bigot, because that's what a bigot does. You know, you can't say all black people are, you know, I don't know.
Right. Well, anything you say, it's a stereotype.
You can't not be called a bigot, but for some reason, it's okay to conflate Muslims like that.
Which makes no sense.
And terribly unfair.
Right. Now, you pointed out also that Rudy Giuliani was on that show, too, right?
Right.
And, boy, David Gregory just cut him off, didn't he?
He cut off.
Not Rudy Giuliani, but Reza Aslan.
Yeah, he cut him off when he was trying to bring up Rudy Giuliani's Islamophobia. It literally mid sentence went to someone else, went to Mike McDonald, or to a Republican spokesperson. So yeah, he just cuts him off, and it's a shame, because for whatever reason, we don't want to be honest about the politicians who are drumming up this fear. You know, and not calling them out and saying, yeah, you know what, this is bigoted. This is ridiculous. There is nothing to be afraid of, and they're using this for partisan purposes.
Right. Now, Faux News has no trouble doing exactly that. Here's an example.
Well, a day before we mark 9 years since 9/11, a new report says the government has been slow to take seriously the threat posed by homegrown terror and failing to put systems in place to deal with that growing threat. Molly Hannaberg reporting more from Washington on this. Hey, Molly.
Hi, Megan. Remember the 9/11 commission? The two former chairmen of that panel, Tom Kaine and Lee Hamilton, now head up the Bipartisan Policy Center's National Security Preparedness Group, which put out this new report. They say the Islamic terror threat has changed, and they're particularly concerned and focused on homegrown terror, Americans who have been radicalized via the internet or trips overseas. Specifically, they point to these guys, Abdul Hakim Muhammad, born Carlos Bledsoe, an American convert to Islam who killed one and wounded another in a June 2009.
All right, I'm cutting that off right there, because it goes on like that, and all they do is point out homegrown terrorism by Muslim Americans without pointing out that what?
Without pointing out a single domestic terrorist who would be considered, you know, a Christian, a white Christian male.
Exactly. The Timothy McVeigh sort.
Exactly. Not Timothy McVeigh, Dr. Tiller's assassin.
Right.
The guy who shot up the Unitarian Universalist Church.
Right.
Holocaust
Museum.
The Amish community.
Uh-huh.
There, we can go one right after another and name all of these domestic terrorists who were not Muslim, who were equally radicalized.
That's right.
And yet that is ignored by not only the report, but Fox News.
Yeah, it's incredible. The report ignored it as well?
Yes, the report ignored it as well. They did. It was I forget how many page report. So we have a PDF of it on Crooks and Liars. But they did a report and completely ignored the homegrown American terrorist threat that is radicalized American, you know, white Christian males. The Houthi militia. The guy who decided he was going to shoot up the ACLU and the Tides Foundation after listening to Glenn Beck. You know, all of those people completely ignored.
Now, who put out that report?
It was called the Bipartisan Policy Initiative or something like that. So I don't know if it was purchased by, or, you know, ordered by the government or not, but that the group was called the Bipartisan Policy Initiative.
Because when Janet Napolitano took over as Director of Homeland Security, and they released that report on the right-wing radicals, and it did mention the Timothy McVeighs, the white Christian homegrown terrorists. They came under so much attack, so much, so many attacks from the right. So I guess they backed off this time.
I maybe. I mean, yeah, they were told that they were ignoring the real threat. And I think that's sort of the point. This weekend, you know, as we look at 9/11 and we try to make sense of it in terms of the country's history, we also have to look at what we're doing within our country to radicalize people, and look at how don't look at someone's face, don't look at their, you know, they have dark skin or, you know, swarthy complexions and say, oh, that's a terrorist. You
right.
have to look at how we're radicalizing everybody.
When you have people walking,
firebombing mosques throughout the country, I don't think Muslims are necessarily the biggest threat to us.
No, I don't think so either. You also have to look at what their influences are. And if they're hearing the hate speak from, oh, like Michael Savage and Rush Limbaugh and Glenn Beck, you have to look at who's inciting them to do these things.
Absolutely.
Yep. Nicole Bell is with us. She's at crooksandliars.com, and we do this every Monday morning now. We sort of take apart some of the stuff, the highlights and lowlights from the Sunday talk shows. It's a segment we call Fools on the Hill. Let's move over to CNN. Ali Velshi was talking about, and move on to the economy. Stupid.
Yes.
And the Bush tax cuts that are set to expire at the end of this year. And the reason that happened is because the Republicans, who didn't have enough of a majority to get it through using these tax cuts through using traditional methods, went the route of reconciliation. That's how they passed it. And because they use reconciliation, it expires in 10 years, which happens at the end of this year. It's the way they passed it. These tax cuts are set to expire at the end of the year. The president has been very clear. He says he wants to make the tax cuts for the middle class permanent. But for people making over $250,000 a year, he thinks, you know, they don't need it, and it would be too much of a cost to the nation and put too much more right on the deficit. And so those people making over $250,000 a year should not have to, those tax cuts should expire, as was the intent of the people who passed the law. Peter Marucci was on with Ali Velshi, and here's what he had to say about it.
Is it okay what the president is saying? I mean, is it really going to hurt us to cut, to eliminate those tax breaks? In other words, to increase the rate of taxes that the richest in America pay?
Well, first of all, it's not the people that are making $2, 3, and 4 million a year that I'm worried about. It's all those small businesses where they net out $250,000, $500,000, where two people work together, a husband and wife, and have a large capital investment, and that business is also their retirement asset. Repealing those tax cuts for folks, for families above $250,000, raises to above 50% the taxes on 50% of the small business income in America. Mr. Obama, this is not the 1990s and the high-tech boom. This is a tough economy. Raising those taxes on those small businesses would negate anything else that he would want to do.
Yeah. No.
Well, I mean, he starts off just factually incorrect.
Uh-huh. This,
I mean, the $250,000 cap really is only going to impact, I think, Think Progress did a study, 2% of the
right.
small businesses
right.
in this country. 2%.
Right. 2%. But they're throwing around numbers 50% trying to confuse people. I guess that's how they get all the Tea Partiers who probably make, you know, an average of $25,000, $30,000 a year, if that, if they're working, to fight for their, you know, tax cuts for the wealthy.
Exactly. I mean, you've got people saying they've been taxed enough already, and you know, just looking at them, that these are not people making $250,000 a year. And when you point out that they've already gotten a tax cut from Obama, and, you know, he's planning on extending the Bush tax cuts even further, you kind of go, well, wait, how have you been taxed enough already?
Right.
Where have you been taxed
right.
enough already? But they do conflate it, and they make it sound like small business owners, who are absolutely the backbone of the American economy, are the ones that are going to be hurting. And truthfully, it's like there's a rare few doctors and lawyers' offices that are, for the most part, that 2% of small businesses making $250,000 or more. That's it.
Exactly. I mean, exactly. We're doing
all of this just for partisan purposes, for election purposes, because we want everyone to think that their taxes are going to be raised, so they'll vote against the Democrats, because that's the biggest arrow in their quiver.
Have you seen? Completely non-factual. Have you seen this commercial that's airing ad nauseum on TV with these very, I'm sorry, they look like poor people. They don't even look like middle class people talking about now is not the time to raise taxes. Don't raise taxes on energy companies. We need that energy. We need gasoline. This is not the time to raise taxes.
Yeah, ones put out by the American Petroleum Institute using actors who look blue collar.
Yes.
And
it's horrible.
And it's and for people who don't have the time to look at the issues, who, you know, kind of accept what they're hearing, it's scary because they do think that that's what's going on. It's the same thing with the people who think, you know, Obama's a Muslim.
Yeah, you got that right.
Just keeps getting repeated over and over again, and it becomes part of your consciousness.
Yep.
And if you don't have the time to do the actual research to find out the truth, that's the stuff you operate with. And that's what makes Fox News and Glenn Beck and Sean Hannity that scary.
Right. Well, you know, one of my favorite clips that you sent this week comes from Fox News Sunday with Chris Wallace. My God, I don't know what Mike Wallace's politics are, but he's got to be so ashamed of his son. His guest was Austin Goolsbee, who is, I guess he's taken Peter Orszag's place as the new chair of the President's Council of Economic Advisors. And bad name, Austin Goolsbee, but he called Chris Wallace out. But wait till you hear the way Chris Wallace frames the question, which just blows my mind. Here, have a listen.
I want to focus on the centerpiece of the economic debate and the political debate this fall, which is likely to be the Bush tax cuts. The president says that Republicans want to hold the tax cuts for the middle class hostage until they get also the tax cuts for the so-called rich.
The so-called rich.
I want you to take a look at some numbers that we've put together. 50% of small business income, and this comes from the Tax Policy Center and the Joint Committee on Taxation, 50% of small business income would be hit by raising taxes on the so-called wealthy.
So-called
wealthy. That's 900,000 small businesses that employ millions of workers. Question. You don't think that a 13% hike in the taxes of small businesses is going to slow them down?
Look, Chris, that number you just cited is highly misleading. So the first is, what is the definition of a small business? 97% of small businesses are totally unaffected by raising the top marginal rate.
I didn't talk about the number of small businesses. I talked about the amount of income. It's 50% of the income.
If a lobbyist sets up shop or a lawyer in which they're receiving income through what is something like a tax loophole, so that it's not counting as corporate income, that is what this is counting as a small business. The president's small business assistance bill would cut taxes 8 different times for 4 million real small businesses. In this circumstance, I do not believe that having the personal income tax go up on people, the majority of that income has nothing to do with small business. I do not believe that having those rates go back to what they were in the 1990s is devastating to small business.
But
if you want to help small business, pass the president's bipartisan small business bill. It would give credit to small business, would cut taxes 8 different times for them, eliminating capital gains for millions of business owners.
Now, so the president's small business bill, I was talking with Victoria Jones just a few minutes ago from Talk Radio News, and she thinks that actually has a chance of passing.
I think the Republicans realize that is not the way they want to go into this election cycle.
Uh-huh.
With the Democrats being able to go, they tell you they care about small businesses, but look what they did.
Right. Well, I would think there's enough of that around that Democrats can play off it, but they don't seem to do it.
There's a lot of frustration, at least among my circle, about that, because I think we talked about this last week. I don't remember, but there've been 5 polls, independent polls came out in the last 2 weeks that found that the majority of Americans actually support having the Bush tax cuts expire for the wealthy. They have no problem with it.
Right.
So clearly this is not resonating with the American voters. So if you can, you add to that the fact that the Republicans vote, because you know they vote as a bloc.
Sure.
They vote against the small business bill. Yeah, they're going to be in trouble.
Yeah.
Even if the Democrats don't, you know, use this to their advantage, which I wish they would, but, you know.
They don't.
They haven't so far.
Yep. All right. And one last clip. Howard Kurtz, who is not my favorite, he took a bit from John Stewart, but at least he credited for him at the end. He's talking about Sean Hannity, who editing President Obama's Labor Day speech. Here's what he said.
Here's what I didn't like. Sean Hannity is no fan of Barack Obama, and he's perfectly entitled to bash him night after night. But here's how the Fox News host analyzed Obama's recent speech in Ohio.
Now, the president did have a rare moment of honesty during his speech, and I hope voters around the country are watching this.
Taxes are scheduled to go up substantially next year for everybody.
All right, that's right. I know the anointed one will make sure that that happens.
But just a second. Here's a little bit more of what Obama said. Under the tax plan passed by the last administration, taxes are scheduled to go up substantially next year. For everybody. By the way, this was by design.
So Hannity's careful editing just happens to leave out Obama's explanation that the Bush administration had arranged for the tax cuts to expire in 2010, not to mention that Obama wants to extend the tax cuts for 98% of Americans while ending them for the wealthiest taxpayers. Isn't that kind of editing, what's the word, deceptive? A tip of the hat to The Daily Show for catching that one.
Yeah, so at least he did tip of the hat to The Daily Show. But Jon Stewart did that, I think it was Thursday night, one night last week, pointed that out.
Right.
And it's what you would expect from Sean Hannity. And the one thing Howie Kurtz didn't do is say that that's what they always do.
Right. And he didn't acknowledge that this is what Fox News has consistently done to, you know, Democrats for years. And it's not Sean Hannity only. You see it, we've seen it on Bill O'Reilly's
yep,
show. We've seen it on Glenn Beck's show. I mean, the only one that I would say has attempted to keep things in context is Greta Van Susteren.
I'll have to take your word for it.
Not that great.
I'll have to take your word for it because I don't think I've ever watched her show. I just can't do it. I can't. It makes my skin crawl. I feel like I need to take a shower after my TV accidentally goes on the faux news channel. Anyway,
that's why crooks and liars exist.
Absolutely.
You watch Fox News so you don't
Exactly. And then thank you all for that very much. Nicole Bell of Crooks and Liars, it is always a pleasure, and thank you so much for getting up early to join us on Mondays.
Oh, any time for you, Nicole.
All right. I'll talk to you next week.
Okay, take care.
Okay, bye-bye. All right, I'll be back in 1 second, about a minute, to wrap things up, but I'll let the Mr. Announcer Man give you once again the details on what's happening tonight on regarding Move to Amend.
Tonight at 7, it's the Move to Amend speaking tour with David Cobb.
On January 21st, 2010, the Supreme Court ruled that corporations are persons entitled by the U.S. Constitution to buy elections and run our government.
Human beings are people. Corporations are legal fictions. Learn more about this and how you can get involved at the Move to Amend speaking tour with David Cobb, who will be joined by Nicole Sandler at the Unitarian Universalist Congregation of Fort Lauderdale, 3970 Northwest 21st Avenue. If you can't make it, watch it live on RadioOrNot.com. That's tonight at 7, the Move to Amend speaking tour with David Cobb. The Nicole Sandler Show, weekday mornings at 10 on the South Florida Radio Network.
All right. We've got about a minute left. I'd say our first day at the new town, in the new slot, went okay. Thank you, everyone who came over and joined in. I appreciate it. Tomorrow, I'm not sure what we'll do in the first hour, but Gotta Laugh from the politicalcarnival.net will join us in hour two to dish on the news. We will have fun and get serious both at the same time. Again, don't forget, tonight I will join you. If you can't, go to radioornot.com. And you can find everything you need to know. In fact, all the information, I do a blog every day, so links to the guests, things that everybody talked about, you can always find there. And if you would like to email me, You know, be sure to go to radioornot.com as well. Kendrick Meek will be on the show Wednesday morning at 11:15. John Fugelsang on Thursday, and whatever else comes our way. What else? I will see you tonight. Don't forget, stay tuned for George Rodriguez next at SoFloRadio.com, and I'll see you back here tomorrow night, Radio or Not. Or tomorrow morning, 10 a.m.
It's the Nicole Sandler Show, Radio or Not.